As world economies go down the tank and unemployment continues to rise, which some might say maybe some of these politicians actually want, the disenfranchised people are set to explode. And now, I was handed this morning when I got into work. I've been trying to get a copy of this for a while. It is a brand new book. It is a dangerous book. It is called The Coming Insurrection.
It's the end of the world as we know it. I feel fine.
Good morning, slaves, and welcome to another edition of It's the End of the World as We Know It and I Feel Fine, the show where doomsayers come to relax. I am your host, Stimulator, and in news of the motherfucking END, a new report by some of the world's worst villains claims that climate change will cause civilizations to collapse.
Yes!
The 6,700-page State of the Future report was written by 2,700 experts, and it's backed by such shit fuck like the World Bank, the US Army, and the Rockefellers. Seems that these planet-destroying creeps want to feel better about themselves by letting us know the consequences of their actions.
We are doomed.
The report also states,
too many greedy and deceitful decisions led to a world recession and demonstrated the international interdependence of economics and ethics.
I don't think we needed 2,700 motherfucking experts to tell us that. Meanwhile, the eco-protagonists at Greenpeace reacted to the grim news by dropping a banner calling on Obama to stop global warming. And what did the man your mama calls Obama do?
Yes. So crazy right now. Most incredibly.
Well, he signed an executive order to stop the construction of all new coal-fired power plants and press Congress to enact laws that will make it illegal to mine for coal in the U.S. Obama also ordered Canada to halt production of oil in
the motherfucking tar sands
or face military action.
Surrender pronto or we'll level Toronto.
Oye, Steam.
Wait, what was that?
El día de los pendejos ya pasó.
Oh, that the April Fool's edition was months ago? No, sorry about that.
This week, the G8 nations came to a historic consensus on concrete goals for reducing carbon emissions. We all agree that by 2050, developed nations will reduce their emissions by 80%.
That was the commander-in-chief at the G8 summit in Italy. Obama and the seven other gangsters of the industrialized world talked a big game about cutting carbon emissions, but offered no good plan on how to do this. Outside the fortress, thousands of protesters let it be known that they are not down with what the rulers have planned for us.
Come here from Scotland to show my solidarity with the Italian people and with the people of L'Aquila, and in joining them to say that capitalism doesn't have the answers anymore for the economic crisis and the climate crisis that we face today. We're at a shifting point in the world in terms of all kinds of global politics, and the leaders of the world need to address these in new ways because the old ways have failed us.
They want to bring down capitalism and the Western way of life.
In La France, the same workers that kidnapped their punk-ass bosses a few months ago at the Renault plant threatened to blow up the now-closed factory where they slaved for years if the motherfuckers up top do not give every worker 30,000 euros.
We have detonators, it's ready to explode. If we don't get what we want by July 31st, our threats will become a reality.
Oh, snack.
This started in France and started to spread.
In Berlin, over 5,000 troublemakers battled the pigs in an attempt to squat the now-closed Tempelhof airport. The squatters want the land to be used as public space, rather than sold to developers, who would build overpriced yuppie fattening pens. This action was seen by some as the culmination of hundreds of politically motivated car arsons, including trucks belonging to the douchebags from DHL, which supply logistics for the German army in Afghanistan.
Now, it's about to come here to America.
In Oregon, brave forest defenders caused major economic damage to the timber industry by blocking a logging road leading to Elliott State, a native forest that's home to many endangered species.
It is habitat to marbled murrelets, spotted owls, and the coastal salmon. Coastal coho salmon, all of which are listed under the endangered species list. And the Oregon Department of Forestry treats this area like a piggy bank whenever they need money.
In Canada, an unpopular pipeline in northern British Columbia has been bombed 6 times since October and has now been nicknamed the Canuck Flute.
Gee, who's been worried about the Canadian border?
The pipeline is owned by Encana, a company criticized for drilling for gas in environmentally sensitive areas. The Royal Canadian Mounted Popo called the latest bombing an act of terrorism. But some locals feel that the alleged bomber has done a service to the community by calling attention to the dangers that natural gas pipelines have brought to their hometown. And last but not least, American mass murderer Robert McNamara escaped war crimes tribunals by kicking the proverbial bucket. This evil son of a bitch was complicit in the death of millions of Vietnamese people while Secretary of Defense during the Kennedy and Johnson administrations. Maybe we'll be lucky enough to see Henry Kissinger stand trial before he croaks. But for the time being, Bobby, I hope you burn in hell.
I don't know why I'm over here, this job is evil. They sent me here to Vietnam to kill innocent people. My mother wrote me, said the president, he doesn't care. He trying to leave the footprints of America here. They say we're trying to stop Chinese expansion, but I ain't seen no Chinese since we landed. Sent my whole entire unit thinking we could win against the Viet Cong guerrillas there in Jigaden. I didn't sign up to kill women or any children. For every enemy soldier, we killing 6 civilians. Yeah, and it ain't right to me. I ain't got enough of motherfuckers. It frightens me, and I just wanna see my son and moms. But over here they dropping 7 million tons of bombs. I spend my days dodging all these booby traps and mines, and at night praying to God that I get back alive. And I'm forced to sit back and wonder why I was a part of Operation Rolling Thunder. In a foxhole with 9 months left here. Jungle like the fucking harbinger of death here.
Not too long ago, when using the word terrorist was in vogue, that vomit-inducing sellout Alberto Gonzalez wanted to show his masters that he too could smoke them out of their holes.
Yesterday, a grand jury in the District of Oregon returned an indictment charging 11 members of a Portland-based cell of animal rights and environmental extremists for their roles in a pattern of domestic terrorism activities.
I'll charge 11 dedicated environmental activists with numerous counts of arson and sabotage. And as you heard, he went on to call the defendants terrorists in a suite that the federales called Operation Backfire. Peeps in the movement called it the Green Scare, a reference to the Red Scare, a roundup and intimidation of political dissidents during the 40s and 50s. To find out more about this government persecution of environmentalists, I spoke with Lauren Regan of the Civil Liberties Defense Center and attorney for several Green Scare defendants. Hey Lauren, how the f*** are you?
I'm great.
So why the f*** do you call it the Green Scare?
That is a name that we have used to describe really the last 8 to 10 years of increased government repression against people involved in a variety of radical movements, primarily the environmental and animal rights movement, but it also includes people who adhere to an anarchist philosophy, as well as people who could be labeled as anti-capitalists. And we hearken that name back to the Red Scare, which during the 1930s to the 1950s, the government attempted to persecute people who held communist beliefs, political philosophy beliefs, that the government was inherently threatened by. And it really didn't matter whether you were a communist or not. If the government labeled you as such, there were grave implications to you, including being subpoenaed to congressional hearings, being blacklisted and losing your livelihood, being ostracized from friends and family and your social community. And for many who refused to testify at those hearings, they were imprisoned and lost their liberty. And there really was not a legitimate crime purpose in these witch hunts that occurred back then. It really was a false fear that the government instilled in the people that culminated in grave curtailing of people's First Amendment rights. And the Green Scare is really the modern version of that. No longer is the word communist, of course. Instead, the government has replaced that with this term eco-terrorist. And it really doesn't matter whether that term is correct or not. If the government attempts to label you as such, grave implications result as well, including harsh imprisonment. There have been hundreds and hundreds of grand juries where innocent people were subpoenaed to these secret tribunals and had a choice. They could either give information to the government about their political movements, their associations, their friends and loved ones, or they could face going to jail. And many faced that choice, and, you know, with a variety of outcomes.
What were these so-called terrorists charged with, and how much time did they get?
Well, almost everybody that we would call a Green Scare defendant was charged with arson, setting fire to mere property. There was no human injury or human loss. This was just economic sabotage, simple property damage. And normally in the federal system, someone convicted of the crime of arson would get a 2-year prison sentence. My clients, who were charged with the exact same thing, faced as high as life plus 1,115 years in prison for the exact same crime. And none of our clients ultimately got 2 years in prison. As a matter of fact, Marie Mason, who was convicted of an arson at Michigan State University, was just sentenced to 21 years and 10 months for her role in a single arson in which her ex-husband snitched her out to the feds. So we saw an incredibly grave disparity between what normally occurs in the federal system and what occurred in these political cases. And clearly the government was attempting to send a message.
And why do you think the government is so threatened by a handful of activists?
Historically, sabotage as a tactic has always been very threatening because it's unpredictable, it is effective, and very often because the people involved are underground, they go unchecked. They are never caught. I think that combination of things is deeply effective when it comes to the government crackdown. I also think that we most often see the government in this country react in harsh ways when movements, particularly radical movements, are threatening those core beliefs. When people are attempting to change the status quo, or when they are taking shots at some of the quote-unquote fabric of American life, the reaction tends to be much harsher than otherwise. You know, we kind of joke, if you burn a building down for insurance fraud, you know, you get 2 years in jail. If you burn it down because it's an illegal horse slaughterhouse facility, you know, you get 10. And so I guess I would say that this is not the first time that the government has reacted in this way to these types of tactics. You know, you only have to go back to the labor movement and their use of economic sabotage to earn the 8-hour workday as an example. In those cases, the government actually murdered people. There were bombings, there were tons of arrests and lengthy imprisonment, all because people used arson and other forms of economic sabotage to gain political clout. And I think that in this instance, this is just another one of those examples. This is the modern incarnation of traditional government repression.
Thanks, Lauren.
May God deliver us from the venom of the cobra, teeth of the tiger, and the vengeance of the Afghan. You understand what this means?
That you guys don't take any sh-
Yes. Something like this.
It's the end of the world as we know it. I feel fine.
Good morning, slaves, and welcome to another edition of It's the End of the World as We Know It and I Feel Fine, the show that keeps score. I am your host, Stimulator, and the man your mama calls Obama has been in office for about half a year. So I think it's safe to do a little review on how the newest CEO of America Inc. has been running this for the past 6 months.
I don't oppose war in all circumstances.
On the war front, Barack gave the military-industrial complex the reach around by ramping up the war against brown people. 3 days after being given the keys to the White House, this triggered happy son of a bitch order an attack inside Pakistan, killing 18 peeps. Obama will also double troop levels in Afghanistan, a country that historically has been a major pain in the ass to its occupying armies.
This is Afghanistan. Alexander the Great tried to conquer this country, then Genghis Khan, then the British, now Russia. But Afghan people fight hard, they never be defeated.
About 67 coalition soldiers were killed in July of this year, making it the worst month for the occupying forces yet.
I will begin to remove our troops from Iraq immediately. Well, let me tell you, it is hot for American troops who are over there with 100 pounds worth of gear, and that kind of irresponsibility is not helpful. So we have to begin a phased withdrawal, have our combat troops out by March 31st of next year.
We'll move forward with our strategy to responsibly remove all American combat brigades from Iraq by the end of next August, and to fulfill our commitment to remove all American troops from Iraq by the end of 2011.
To get your vote, Obama told you he would pull troops out of Iraq, but so far more than 130,000 still remain there, and permanent bases are part of the plan. I mean, did you think the U.S. was going to let the Iraqis manage all that oil?
In order to effect the appropriate disposition of individuals currently detained by the Department of Defense at Guantanamo, and promptly to close the detention facility at Guantanamo consistent with the national security and foreign policy interests of the United States.
Okay, he's got another 6 months to close that one. But don't hold your breath.
Al-Qaeda terrorists and their affiliates are at war with the United States, and those that we capture, like other prisoners of war, must be prevented from attacking us again.
On the other hand, he might not need to close Guantanamo to continue the good work of President George W. Bush. As we reported on this show, Obama wants the power to detain people for crimes they have not yet committed. Obama will also keep rocking those groovy military tribunals and has invoked state secrets to block court cases challenging torture and domestic spying. This is also something that turd burglar George W. was doing on the regular to keep motherfuckers off his back, and something Obama himself said he would not do while sucker punching you for your vote.
The way to make government responsible is to hold it accountable. And the way to make government accountable is make it transparent so that the American people can know exactly what decisions are being made, how they're being made, and whether their interests are being well served.
But Obama's stinkiest foreign policy anal discharge to date has been his handling of the coup in Honduras. Barack has ignored this assault on democracy and once again has shown that he's not really down with the brown. Now imagine what would have happened if the ousted president of Honduras would have been a US-friendly dictator and the country had billions of barrels of bubbling crude.
Oil, that is. Black gold. Texas tea.
While the not-so-funny shit show that we call the economy was plunging to lower lows, our pimp in charge was emptying the coffers of the treasury, i.e. your motherfucking hard-earned slave ducats, and handing them over to the blood enema drinkers that fuck motherfucker in the first place.
I just want to say that the only thing less popular than putting money into banks is putting money into the auto industry.
Yep, he gave billions to bail out such greedy capitalist crack smokers as Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan Chase, who reported massive profits in the billions on the first quarter of 2009. Billions more went to General Motors, a company that produced the least fuel efficient and most polluting consumer vehicle in the history of God's vast vagina, the Hummer, which was recently sold to the Chinese. Finally, for brown folks everywhere, who year after year are profiled and harassed by the motherfucking pigs, the biggest disappointment came when Uncle Obama, after initially having Professor Gates' back, reversed his position after calling the pig who arrested his homie stupid. Obama's main man, Henry Louis Gates, is an award-winning Harvard prof who got busted by a racist po-niner for trying to break into his own house, even after producing evidence that he lived there.
Open and shut case, Johnson. I saw this once before when I was a rookie. Apparently the broke in and hung up pictures of his family everywhere.
Yes, 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 it's time. We all come together. Ha ha. Barack Obama.
Yes, we can, yeah.
Barack Obama.
We all come together.
Barack Obama. Wait a minute, wait a mother minute. Turn that shit off. Yo, Franti, what the fuck was that all about? Just let me look through my archives and I'll play y'all some real shit from about 20 years ago.
Another summer, sound of the
funky drummer. Music hit your heart, cause I know you got a soul. Listen if you're missing, y'all. Swinging while I'm singing. Giving what you're getting. Knowing what I'm knowing. While the black band's sweating. In the rhythm I'm rolling. Gotta give us what we want. Gotta give us what we need. Our freedom of speech is freedom of death. We got to fight the powers that be. Fight the power. 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 We got to fight the powers that be.
Scientists the world over are shit bricks because they see that there's no political will to solve our climate clusterfuck.
It takes mandates from governments. It has to come from governments from big countries, small countries. They have to be in agreement that, yes, this is a problem, and here, by gosh, is what we're going to do about it. And I think that seems to be almost impossible.
Well, look, governments never lead. People lead. Governments follow. I mean, so rarely does governments really get in front of something and do it. So I really think it's in our own actions that we do it.
Most climate scientists agree that we have missed a chance to stop the climate from warming more than 2 degrees Celsius. While politicians spent their time looking at butts, thousands of species are biting the dust every month. This is no motherfucking joke, y'all. The urgency to stop the destruction of our planet should be our first concern. And since time is limited, we have to be smart on how we act and not waste our time with tactics that have proven ineffectual in the past. That's the main theme behind my next film, End Civ. To give you a sneak peek into the film and other ideas about the motherfucking resistance, I bring you Derek Jensen, author of What We Leave Behind. Hey Derek, how are you?
I'm doing okay. I'm surprised you didn't say how the f*** are you. Isn't that your standard line?
Okay, I'll play along. Hey Derek, how the f*** are you?
I'm doing well, how are you doing?
Well, I've been feeling a little constipated lately, you know, a little blocked. My girl has been feeding me gallons of prune juice and that seems to be helping, but speaking of s***, you have a new book out that you wrote with Eric McBay. And people are saying that it's the s***. Just what the f*** they mean?
In Endgame, I talk about how this culture is not sustainable because it relies on the importation of resources, and any culture that takes more than the land gives willingly can never be sustainable, pretty obviously. And in this book, I wanted to take it from the other end, with no pun intended, is that I wanted to talk about how any culture that has waste products that aren't food for someone else, that's also not sustainable. I mean, plastic is a big problem. No one has ever in the history of the planet eaten plastic. And that means it cannot decay. And that's a huge problem because when you die, you know, your flesh is eaten. Your flesh starts being consumed almost immediately. When you your starts getting consumed almost immediately. And when I forced all the time. And if I go back a day or two later, it's almost always gone. It's been a meal for somebody. And so I wanted to look at how that's another way that this culture can never be sustainable, is if it produces plastic, it's never sustainable. And then, of course, because I can't stay on topic, it ends up being about everything else in the world.
All right, then. Let's talk about the world.
Well, the world's being murdered. And, you know, we can talk about whatever statistics you want. 90% of large fish in the oceans are gone. 6 to 10 times as much plastic as phytoplankton in the oceans, which is the equivalent of, if you were to eat 10 bites, 9 of them would be styrofoam.
Fuck.
I'm surprised that anybody's standing at this point. I mean, there's dioxin in every mother's breast milk. The latest reports on global warming are that they believe that how much it will heat up is twice what they've previously said. So now they're expecting it to be about 9 degrees. This is a huge, huge, huge change. And the response by those in power is what we would expect. It's absolute uselessness at best.
So, Derek, can the destruction of the planet be stopped by purely peaceful means?
Could you stop Ted Bundy by peaceful means? How well has it worked for Indians to make treaties? It's a great line by Red Cloud. They made us many promises, more than I can remember. They only kept but one. They promised they would take our land, and they did it. How do you stop someone who stops at nothing? I mean, right now, I mean, as we're doing this interview, the Nigerian government is attacking the Movement for the Emancipation of the Niger Delta, and they're actually slaughtering lots of non-militants, as you know, as these things go. And yesterday, the French lent their support to the Nigerian military offensive. And also yesterday, MEND blew up 5 pipelines. And MEND tried for years to work, well, prior to MEND, the Ogoni people tried for years, MOSOP tried for years to work nonviolently with the Nigerian government. And we all know what happened to Ken Saro-Wiwa. And really, the murder of Ken Saro-Wiwa and the other activists, the legal murder through hanging, is what led directly to MEND. They didn't pick up weapons because they wanted to. They picked up weapons because they had tried nonviolence for years and it didn't work. And the environmental movement has tried playing by their rules for years. And how well has that worked? How well has that worked for the salmon? How well has that worked for the Delta smelt? How well has that worked for the Kootenai sturgeon? How well has that worked for the bull trout? How well is it working for the whippoorwills? How well is it working for the bobwhites? How well is it working for any migratory songbirds? Not very well.
Thanks, Derek. And that about does it for this edition of It's the End of the World as We Know It and I Feel Fine. I want to thank the following slaves for funneling their sweat equity to make the show happen. Sean, Mike, Yuki, Lucas, Zachary, Helen, Lee, Johnny, Melissa, and Richard. Aymara. To find out more about Derek Jensen and my film NCIV, go to ncif.com. To comment on this show, just visit my website, stimulator.tv. Now fight the power.
Remember, kids, you can podcast high-quality video of this show at submedia.tv.